Sometimes you can come from a stressful home. And in a stressful, dysfunctional home, sometimes we can look at love as being something that love really is not.
Remember how my grandmother was talking about different kinds of love? My aunt says that a mother's love and family love is very important.
There's different types of love. There's a mother's love for her children, and that type of love is supposed to nourish and guide the child that they will grow up healthy and loving themselves.
What does loving yourself have to do with anything?
Loving yourself or having high self-esteem about yourself. Okay? That will make you grow up into an adult that would be able to distinguish what love really is. When you have the love of your mother and the love of your father, and when you're raised a certain way, mainly, like I said, when your self-esteem is all intact, when you're not looking to the next person to get this love, but you love yourself first, where you can love someone else. Okay? A healthy type of love. Healthy love is what I'm talking about.
When I first started asking this question, I thought that love could make you crazy. But after everything I heard, I think love can make you crazy only if you were crazy to begin with.
In 1998, four major tobacco companies signed an agreement called the Master Settlement Agreement. The companies, Philip Morris USA, R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, Brown & Williamson Tobacco Corporation, and Lorillard Tobacco Company, all agreed, among other things, to stop all advertising aimed at kids. This meant no more cigarette billboards, no more cartoon characters representing cigarette brands, and cigarette sponsorship of youth events was banned. Seems like a pretty good idea, right? However, studies have shown that 90% of adult smokers begin at or before age 19. A quick tour of the 7-Eleven on Forest Ave and the mobile station on Congress Street in our own Portland, Maine, gave me some answers. Many cigarette ads were placed awfully close to candy racks and to toy racks. In fact, all you really need to do to be exposed to cigarette ads is just walk into the convenience store. You open the door and bam, there is a whole wall of cigarettes behind the cashier, which is very hard to avoid, especially when a lot of candy bars are lined up right in front of the cash register. So, anyone, regardless of age, looking to get their sugar fix at the nearest 7-Eleven will be bombarded with cigarette ads. Even walking by convenience stores exposes you to ads posted in the windows. You know the ones with the red and white Marlboro signs or the one for the Camel cigarettes? Along with their logo, the companies also post in big black numbers the price of their particular pack or carton of cigarettes. Both supermarkets and drugstores don't sell as many cigarettes as they used to simply because they can't display the ads and products as well. However, that leaves convenience stores. There are 140,000 convenience stores in the United States, and about 63% of cigarettes sold in the United States are sold in convenience stores. 34% of all purchases in convenience stores are cigarettes. So what better place to put a poster for your Marlboro? Of course, cigarette spokespeople are denying that they are targeting their ads at youth, but how can you deny it when they're in plain view of anyone walking into a store and when they're within a foot of candy? The main reason I ever went into a convenience store as a kid was to get a Twix or a Snickers, so of course I was walking by hundreds of ads. Clearly, tobacco companies are exploiting a loophole in this Master Settlement Agreement of 1998. For Blunt Youth Radio, this is Rachel Heasley, signing off.
Good morning. It's 6 a.m. This is Cassin Kennedy.
And this is Mark LaCoy. And you're listening to WGXC Morning Show, 90.7 FM, hands-on radio for Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and all of Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC will be a community-run media project. Re-envisioning radio as an innovative platform for local participation. Our inclusive programming will connect diverse voices and distribute information across the public spectrum in New York's Greene and Columbia counties.
We'll wait for a few more people and think more people will come in when they get...
Thank you for tuning in to WGXC. We are a brand new creative and community radio station serving Greene and Columbia counties. We're working hard to bring you local news and a wide variety of programs produced by the residents of our community. WGXC is a program of the local nonprofit arts organization Free 103.9, which is dedicated to cultivating transmission arts, so expect to hear artists at the forefront of radio art during our late night hours, as well as on Saturdays when we'll regularly be featuring interviews and live performances from internationally renowned artists experimenting with broadcast media.
All right, good morning. This is Cassin Kennedy with the WGXC Newsroom headlines for Thursday, January 13th, 2011. Okay, what's happening in the news? A knife point robbery in Catskill. Another local crime caught it in its midst yesterday demonstrates the desperation many are feeling with the obstinate economy, especially for those without gainful employment of any kind. This morning's Daily Mail reports on how, quote, a seemingly desperate man, unquote, living in a Catskill motel was arrested for allegedly robbing a nearby Italian restaurant at knife point Tuesday night. Nicholas B. Barkham, 35, who police say was residing at Pelokey's Motel along Route 23, entered Tori G's restaurant opposite
the
motel on Route 23 around 9:45 p.m. and demanded cash. Barkham allegedly threatened the clerk with a knife and was given more than $700 in cash, police said. Police believe the motive may have been drug-related. As the man fled, he told the person he'd just robbed that he was headed for Poughkeepsie, after which he caught a taxi to the city of Hudson. Catskill Police Department received the tip on the suspect's whereabouts and worked with the Hudson Police Department to apprehend Barkham Wednesday morning. Barkham was charged with first-degree robbery, a Class B felony, and third-degree criminal possession of a weapon, a Class D felony. He now faces up to 25 years in state prison after being arraigned in Catskill Village Court and remanded to the Greene County Jail without bail.
In other news, Columbia County gets behind its agriculture. Columbia County government has formed a coalition to craft a plan to support the and promote local agriculture. The success of the 18-month process will depend upon broad public input, especially from the farm community. According to a press release sent out on January 11th, 5 public meetings are planned over the next 3 months, starting Saturday, January 22nd in Chatham. And a survey is being mailed to agricultural producers in order to assess the state of local agricultural and design a countywide farmland protection plan. The press release from the Columbia Land Conservancy goes on to note that Columbia County is taking advantage of the Farmland Protection Program, created by the New York State Legislature, is working with the Columbia Land Conservancy to facilitate the program with the county's Ag and Farmland Protection Board. The program establishes a methodology for local governments to assess the status and potential of farming in every community. Economic value, open space value, and consequences of conversation will be analyzed. A survey has been developed to be distributed to the county's producers to complement dialogue produced with the 5 public meetings.
All right, and in other news, a surprise resident is Senate's Sergeant at Arms. George R. Federoff of the Village of Surprise in the town of Greenville is the new Sergeant-at-Arms of the New York State Senate through 2012. State Senator James L. Stewart announced Wednesday. As Sergeant-at-Arms, Federoff acts as the Chief Security Officer of the Senate and, when called upon, aids in enforcing order on the floor of the Senate, in the lobbies, and in the rooms adjoining the Senate chamber. Another headline, New York State extends income tax deadline. The New York State Department of Taxation and Finance announced Wednesday that taxpayers will have until April 18th to file their 2010 personal income tax returns. The usual April 15th deadline was extended because of the federal observance of the Emancipation Day holiday in Washington, D.C. The Internal Revenue Service recently announced the extension of its deadline to the next business day, which is April 18th, so New York is moving its due date also.
Carol Osterlink in the Gossips of Rivertown reports on Monday night's informal common council meeting in Hudson, where First Ward Alderman Sarah Sterling proposed a resolution to authorize the mayor to negotiate with Holcim, the cement company, for the purchase of their property in the city of Hudson. The resolution to purchase the Deepwater Port dock is for its actual worth of $1.5 million, not the current assessed value of $4.5 million, must now pass through the legal committee, chaired by Third Ward Alderman Ellen Thurston, who reads a list of local events on Thursday on WGXC. That committee is tentatively rescheduled to meet 6 p.m. January 26th at City Hall. To read the entire resolution quoted from the Gossips of Rivertown, go to Gossips of Rivertown or on the WGXC website at wg.org/newsroom.
All right, and on a good note, the final piece for this morning, lost Valacia teen found at Walmart. 16-year-old Thomas Unser, reported missing from Valacia since Monday, was located around 1:30 a.m. Wednesday by his father, Todd Breen, at the Walmart store in East Greenbush, according to New York State Police at Livingston. As reported in this morning's Register Star, once Unser's family located the teen, they contacted state police and confirmed he was in good health. The investigation is now closed. Unser's family searched for him through the evening Tuesday, said his mother, Cheryl Unser. We had, quote, we had been out since probably 5 p.m. yesterday afternoon, she said. We had about 10 to 15 of us down in Rensselaer County, end quote. The family followed leads that took them to Skodak, Castleton, and Rensselaer, where Cheryl Unser said police located a person who had given him a ride to the Rensselaer Kmart. There, police learned that Unser had been calling people and trying to get a ride to the Walmart in East Greenbush. Cheryl Unser said she and family members walked around the shopping complex and found nothing. Exhausted, Cheryl Unser returned home to Valacia, but her husband went out to the Walmart where a manager took Breen to the store's video surveillance room where they saw footage of Thomas Unser entering the Walmart again. Adding a wrinkle to the story, it turns out there was a warrant for Thomas's arrest for violating probation. Following his discovery at the Walmart, the Unser family attended court Wednesday morning, and the 16-year-old was placed in the Berkshire Farm Center for Youth. So that's the news, and we have a little song for you.
You're listening to WGXC online at WGXC.org. My name is Mark LaCoy. I'm sitting here with
Casson Kennedy, and I'm going to read you your local almanac for Thursday, January 13th, 2011. Tune in today as WXGC will air the following live shows on XGC Radio Online. Right now you're listening to the morning show with me, Casson Kennedy, Mark LaCoy, and we're going to have Kaya Weidman and Sarah Kendall in. The programming also has Sam Sebrin, Ellen Thurston, Christina Malasoff, Richard Roth, Alan Skerritt, and Nancy Rothman from 9 to 11 a.m. today. They're going to do their show, Tell It Like It Is, from 10 to 11. Crossroads from noon to 2 p.m., Alan Skerritt's weekly show with jazz classics. And 1969 from 9:30 p.m. to midnight, The Magic Strangers' weekly psychedelic excursion. Town meetings tonight. The town of Windham will have a regular town board meeting held on the second and fourth Thursdays of each month at 8 p.m. in the Windham Town Hall located on Main Street in Hensonville. The weather, it's cold, partly cloudy, temperatures in the 20s. For your tides, Hudson today, high tide at 9:05 a.m., low at 4:18 p.m. The sunrise at 7:23 a.m. and will set at 4:44 p.m. The moonrise is at 1:17 a.m. and the set is at 11:28. Birthdays today, we have Charles Nelson Reilly, Jay McInerney, and Suggs. So that's the birthdays, that's the weather, that's the tides, and that's our programming. So Mark has a piece he's going to read. Mark?
Ramping up the region's nano future. A pair of stories today in Albany's Business Review support the regional push to make the Capital District and Hudson Valley the nation's new nanotechnology center, akin to what Silicon Valley was in the 1990s and Austin was last decade, computer-wise. In one story, they report that the University at Albany's College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering has been awarded nearly $5 million in federal funding for research, education, and workforce development based on a January 11th CNSE announcement that it had received federal money for clean energy, nanotechnology, nanoelectronics, and nanomedicine. The funds came from several sources, including the federal stimulus and multiple agencies, including the National Institutes of Health, the Department of Energy, and the U.S. Army Research Laboratory. The story says that at the same time, there's also a report on how computer chip manufacturer Global Foundries, who are building a massive new plant in Saratoga County, north of Albany, that's spurring talk of feeder manufacturers and businesses in Columbia and Greene counties as well. They have announced that it will double its capital expenditures to $5.4 billion this year as the companies build their new plant. As the company builds its new plant in Malta and expands operations in Germany and Singapore. Global Foundries is investing a total of $4.6 billion to build its Malta plant. Much of that money will be spent this year as the company begins to install multi-million dollar chip-making tools. The story reads, The news comes after Gartner, Inc., a Connecticut-based IT research company, announced last month that worldwide semiconductor capital spending more than doubled to $38.4 billion last year from $16.6 billion in 2009. That competition is being pushed as more integrated device companies look to spin off or contract out chip manufacturing to reduce overhead cost. For the rest of this story, you can find it at the WGXC Newsroom website.
All right, and in other news, venture capital opportunities trigger interest, belief that economy may finally be in turnaround. Want a sense of how the economy is doing, where people's money fears lie, and just how the tip of the... Sorry about that. I lost my page. All right, well, hey, why don't I get myself together here, and let's listen to a song from Madness.
All right. That sounds good. This is WGXE.
Have you seen OS?
Sorry?
OS. You seen it?
No, I haven't.
No. You seen OS?
No.
Have you seen OS? Have you seen OS? You seen OS? You seen OS? You seen OS?
Yes.
You seen OS?
Yeah, it's over there, mate.
Over there.
It's down there.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our street.
Something tells you that you've got to move
in the middle of our. Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
WGXC. We are a brand new creative and community radio station serving Greene and Columbia counties. We're working hard to bring you local news and a wide variety of programs produced by the residents of our community. WGXC is a program of the local nonprofit arts organization Free 103.9, which is dedicated to cultivating transmission arts, so expect to hear artists at the forefront of radio art during our late night hours, as well as on Saturdays, when we'll regularly be featuring interviews and live performances from internationally renowned artists experimenting with broadcast media.
Wednesday's weather was just about expected locally, with virtually all schools and closed for the day because of the snow and messy morning commute. Snow totals were reported much higher in Columbia County than in Greene County from the National Weather Service and other sources. We've got 15.5 inches reported in Canaan, 14.5 in North Chatham, 14 in Hillsdale, 12 in Claverack, 10 in Livingston, 8 in Cairo, 5 in Rensselaerville, 4.5 in Greenville, 3 in Freehold, and 2.25 in Ravenna. The ski resorts are reporting, Hunter and Wyndham both reported 10, and Catamount in Hillsdale reported 18. Of course, the ski resorts may be putting their thumb on the scales there. You know, the National Weather Service reports 14 in Hillsdale, and Catamount in Hillsdale is reporting 18. Hunter and Wyndham may also be, have a sort of different scale there for measuring ski resort snowfall. Snow emergencies remain in effect in several municipalities around the area. In Cairo, they're in effect until 8 p.m. Friday. In Catskill, All parking on Main Street is not allowed Thursday night for snow removal. So tonight you cannot have your car anywhere on Main Street because they're going to have big trucks removing snow. Hudson's snow emergency ends 8 a.m. Friday morning, and cars today, Thursday, need to be parked on the even-numbered side of the streets. The Register Star's Lindy Suchow reports that on Wednesday, the Hudson Police Department issued almost $125 tickets for cars parked on the wrong side of the street, though no vehicles have been towed yet. So again, today, Thursday, you need to be parked on even-numbered side of the street in Hudson. You don't want to be parked anywhere on Main Street in Catskill tonight, and the snow emergency rules remain in effect in Cairo until 8 p.m. Friday. This is Tom Rowe for the WGXC Newsroom Headlines.
All right. Thanks to Tom for that. If you're planning on continuing to enjoy the snow today, we have some suggestions about what you can do. Much credit for this compilation of information goes to Ellen Thurston and others. You can enjoy sledding, skating, snowmobiling, and skiing at some of the following spots. In the Hudson Park, the former Sunset Meadows location on Route 9 offers ice skating Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., and Friday through Sunday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., depending on weather conditions. There's no charge for that, but be sure to bring your own skates. You can call 518-851-2228 to determine the ice condition. Lake Taconic State Park offers cross-country skiing and snowmobile trails, plus ice skating and ice fishing. Ice skating and ice fishing are permitted when conditions are appropriate. Please call the park office at 518-851-3631 to check ice thickness. The Kiwanis Ice Arena, located in Saugerties, and operates from the middle of August to the beginning of April. The ice rink surface is 197 feet by 85 feet wide. You can find those at KiwanisIceArena.com. You can find information on that. At Art Omai, trails through the sculpture fields and woodlands for cross-country skiing. They claim 2.5 miles of groomed track and skate lanes for skate skiing. Trails will be groomed all winter long as conditions permit. The cafe and the visitor center is open on weekends from noon to 4 p.m., and we are told that ski conditions right now are very good. That right now is yesterday, but I assume they're still very good today. The Columbia Land Conservancy is offering spontaneous snowshoe hikes when there is adequate snow and the weather conditions are good. The Land Conservancy will let you know when that time is. Beginners are welcome. The Land Conservancy has limited number of snowshoes to lend. To register for the snowshoe email alert system, go to www.clctrust.org. The Copaic Country Club offers cross-country ski packages, skis, boots, poles, and bindings for an undisclosed amount. If you bring your own equipment. If you bring your own equipment, you're ahead of the game. Trails are groomed in varying lengths and are well marked. Information at 518-325-0019. So those are some things you can do.
I just want to make a correction. Coming in with Kaya Weidman today will be Kate Blossom, not Sarah Kendall. And also, if you wanted to add to that list that Kasson just read, you can email us at info@wgxc.org.
And I think there are some more things up on the website that I don't have printed out in my hand. So
we can read those.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll add one. The sledding hill next to the library in Hudson.
That's
pretty
fun. If
you live in Hudson and you're a kid or an adult, you can walk right over there and sled down that hill.
All right, I have one more news item that I'm going to try and finish. It's the one I started just a few minutes ago. Venture capital opportunities trigger interest and belief that the economy may finally be in turnaround. Want a sense of how the economy's doing, where people's money fears lie, and just how prevalent the idea of doing it oneself is these days? Mid-Hudson News Network reports that today some 100 people attended a venture capital forum held at the Stewart Airport Base Airport Tuesday night on the 11th to hear from authorities on how businesses can access capital in the Hudson Valley. Entrepreneurs learned that learned what investors look for, what pitfalls excuse me, to avoid, and how to identify the best investors for their business, and all with a major storm threatening. The Accelerator, Hudson Valley Economic Development Corporation, and Upstate Venture Association of New York conducted the conference. Orange County Business Accelerator Director Michael DiTullo said venture capitalists provide a specific service. Quote, venture capitalists actually make investments in companies. They become principals, they buy equity, startup, and as the company grows, maybe there is an exit strategy and they participate in whatever profit or windfall that could happen as a result of that, end quote. He also said, quote, they also provide management expertise. Very often venture capitalists will serve on the boards of directors. Warren Buffett essentially is a venture capitalist. His company, Berkshire Hathaway, makes investments in companies and sometimes acquires them outright, end quote. On a much more localized level, former WGXC Radio Council member and Greene County Chamber of Commerce Vice President Kathleen Packard noted recently that several clients she's been wooing for her design business have asked to greenlight projects, a first for the past 2 years of economic slowdown. So, if you're a venture capitalist, I hope you're at that meeting. What do we got going on, Mark?
Well, let's listen to this PSA from our children's programmer, Steve Charney.
All right.
Hi, I'm Steve Charney, host of Knock on Wood, and every Friday at 3:30, thousands of people listen to my show. Thousands, Steve? All right. Hundreds of people listen to me play old-time comedy records. Everyone from Monty Python to the Muppets, Trout Fishing in America to Weird Al Yankovic. We also sing funny songs, and I do original routines with Harry My Dummy here using lots of sound effects, just like old-time radio. Hundreds listen, Steve? Okay, tens of people listen to great guests we have on and the funny books we sometimes read. 10, Steve? All right. My mother listens every week to the original funny kids show that's great for the whole family. She listens every week. Once a month. Once a month. Cut that out. Knock on wood. Fridays at 3:30, right here on WGXC.
That's general public with tenderness. And I guess while we're in the 80s, we'll play A Flock of Seagulls. Listening to WGXC. A Flock of Seagulls on WGXC.org. You're listening online at WGXC.org. Soon to be on the air at 90.7 FM, Full Power Radio Station, Acre, New York, Catskill, Hudson.
Yeah, and this is the morning show. So, good morning, Mark, again.
Good morning, Cass. Sorry, I didn't have your mic on there.
Oh, all right. Well, I just said good morning again.
Good morning
again. So what'd you do yesterday, Mark?
Yesterday, drank coffee, came down, helped out around the radio station, took a nap, did some shoveling. The guy who last storm used a snowblower to cover my car, I caught him. I caught up to that guy.
Oh, was he trying it again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. What did he say?
He was a little bit nervous. And then, but he said he would not do it anymore.
Wow, what a gem.
Yeah.
So it's not just you and me in the studio this morning. I don't know if you were aware of that.
No, we have Kaya Weidman and Kate Blofson here. And
yes. Good morning.
Hello. Oh, sorry, your mic wasn't on. Let's try that again. Sorry.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Kasson.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Kasson.
Hey, how was your snow day yesterday?
It was pretty fun. I was actually a guest on the after morning show.
Yeah.
Or rather, the late morning show.
You were more than a guest. I think you were a host. We don't really have an after morning show.
I guess I was a host and was encouraging people to have fun with their snow days and played a lot of children's programs, played some songs from my own collection, learned a little bit about how you guys do it here in the studio.
Oh, did you learn something?
Totally.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I listened to you guys after I went home and was sitting in my big comfortable chair with my slippers on. It sounded great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you guys drink any hot chocolate or make snow angels or anything yesterday?
No, hot tea. See, I don't know. It was almost sort of like a regular day in a way. I didn't go to work, so that was pretty normal. And I hung around the house and found little small tasks to do.
So we have the events page, and let's just get right into that.
What about Kate?
Oh, Kate, what did you do yesterday?
Let's see, what did I do yesterday? I think I told you guys yesterday what I was going to do, and I think I did all of the things I said I was going to do, except I didn't make a snow garden.
Uh-oh.
But I did make cheese, a rope mat to wipe our boots on, went sledding.
Whoa. You found a sled?
Yeah, there's like a some sort of ski shopping cart sled there at the farm. Maybe. Oh, I thought maybe you made it.
We got a tip yesterday from Paul Smart that said to try to use a car hood.
Well, in Philadelphia, my housemate there built this sled last year out of sheet metal that not only had many sharp edges, and we brought it to a park, and he had these holsters for bottle rockets and Roman candles. So we would go down the hill, and it would be like, poof, poof, and everyone would be like, oh my gosh, what is going on?
Was anyone hurt?
No, I think everyone thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's good. Well, it sounds like you did a lot more than me yesterday. What, you said you made a what? A rope something?
I made a rope mat.
Oh, okay.
Which I actually was going to talk to you about. I was wondering if you had a sail needle I could borrow.
No.
Not yet.
I didn't do much sewing, or like sail making or anything. Yeah.
Pretty
so
much.
How about, are you guys going to read the events for us?
Maybe we'll make it a team effort.
Okay, yeah.
Let's see. Let's,
try to get right into that mic.
Okay, so this is an event coming up. There's a performance by Ola Bell, which is the singer, guitarist, mandolinist Amy Helm and bassist vocalist Byron Isaacs, who are regular members of the Levon Helms band, I think is based down in Woodstock. I've heard a lot about. Levon's Amy's father. They're going to perform at Levon's Midnight Ramble concerts. Other Ola Bell members occasionally join up with the Levon Helm band, including Tony Leone, who sometimes sits in on drums while the band while Levon steps out in front and plays mandolin. So this is at Club Helsinki, just down the street on Columbia Street in Hudson, on January 14th at 9 p.m., which I guess is tomorrow. Yep, tomorrow, Friday night. Check that out.
Also on Friday, tomorrow night, starting at the TSL, will be a film by Kenneth Bowser about Phil Oakes, the unlikely American hero. And that's going to be running at the TSL, 434 Columbia Street in Hudson through January 23rd.
And also, as always, if you wanted to volunteer for WGXE, that's how this whole thing works. And you can volunteer at the studio. Come down to 704 Columbia Street. And we have regular office hours during the week.
I don't know.
And there's usually somebody here. Or you can go to WGXE.org. And leave a message there with your info.
All right, and there's some more events too
that I'll read if I didn't cut you off.
No, that's
sorry. Let's see, we have coming up on the 15th at 8 p.m. 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Spotty Dog. Yasu Benedict plays ear-catching experimental pop music with densely layered harmonies and complex rhythmic structures, and anchored by the mesmerizing stage presence of bassist and lead singer Lily By the Way. That's at Spotty Dog on the 15th. And then we have Michael Wedd on the 15th also, but at the Hawthorne Valley School at 6 p.m. Classical piano concert. It's a classical piano concert with works by Mozart, Beethoven, Schumann, and Chopin, all performed by Michael Wedd. Here comes another lesson on the 15th at 2 p.m., that's 2 in the afternoon, at the Hudson Opera House. It's a Stephen O'Connor talk. He is the author of the short story selection, Here Comes Another Lesson. That's just out on Free Press. And he also wrote Rescue. So if you want to hear a talk by him, that's, again, Opera House, 2 p.m. on the 15th. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration on January 15th. It's a peace march from the Second Baptist Church on Main Street in Catskill at 4:30 p.m. And it heads to the county courthouse for speeches. Afterwards, to the Reformed Church for refreshments. So those are some events.
Yeah, that one sounds good. I would like to go check that one out. Also, future of farming in Columbia County. In Chatham, the future of farming in Columbia County, presented by the County Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board. The snow date on that would be on the 24th at 7 this month. Co-sponsors, Columbia County Department of Planning, Columbia County Soil and Water Conservation District, Cornell Cooperative Extension, Farm Credit East, formerly First Pioneer Farm Credit, Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation, and the Columbia Land Conservancy. Citizens are invited to participate in any or all forums, and that will be on January 22nd at 10 a.m. to noon at the North Chatham Firehouse at 653 County Route 32 in Chatham. And again, the snow date on that is the 24th. Winter adaptations. Surviving the winter can be a struggle for many animals. Join us at Mud Creek while we learn how critters cope with the winter's cold. How do animals stay warm and find food? What is the difference between hibernation and torpor? Do frogs really freeze? Come find out. We will explore the world of winter adaptations both inside and outdoors. Please dress for the weather. A limited number of snowshoes are available if needed. Registration for this program is appreciated. Please contact Chelsea Benson by phone at 518-828-4386, extension 3, or by email at chelsea.benson@ccswcd.org. And this is free.
That sounds pretty cool. That sounds like a great thing to do with kids.
That is cool.
I also just wanted to mention while you guys were reading these events to remind people that anyone can post events on the events page at WGXE.org. And as you can hear, they get read several times a day, and it's free to post. And also, if you're like missed something we said or couldn't remember the contacts or any of the information, you can just find it all on the events page. If you go to wgxc.org/events, or you just go to the homepage and click on the events tab.
All right, so anyone can just put whatever they're doing can go up on the page?
Yeah.
All right.
Super easy.
For example, maybe this is one of them. The Blue Bottle Jug Band with Tommy Sharp will be playing bluegrass inflected old-timey swing, and Tommy Sharp plays soulful street punk and spacey blues. And Tommy lives in Hudson. You can go to www.myspace.com/TommySharp. The Blue Bottle Jug Band with Tommy Sharp will be playing at the Spotty Dog Books and Ale on January 29th at 8 to 11. Spotty Dog is located at 440 Warren Street in Hudson, New York. So what else we got?
Well, in a few minutes, the news headlines, that's at 7. And then Paul Smart will be phoning in. But I had a question for Kaya. How's the radio station going?
It's going quite well. We are probably today we'll be announcing our launch date, which we've just finally pulled together some of the last technical and bureaucratic hang-ups that have sort of been keeping us pushing our date forward. And so those things are now resolved, and we have commitments from our Verizon people who are going to provide the connection between the studio here in Hudson and the transmitter up on the mountain in Accra. Right. And for a lot of people, it's like maybe hard to understand exactly how this is all going to happen, but we're going to have dedicated T1 lines, which are quite pricey to run from here to the mountaintop, and then eventually to connect our other two studios as well. So,
right. And once that's done and we're on the air, does that mean the other studios are going to be up and running shortly thereafter, or is that going to be a little bit more of a work in progress?
Yeah, that's kind of going to be our next thing. I mean, what's exciting is that once we'll be on the air, it'll be a lot easier to sort of get people excited about getting the other studios together, because everybody will be able to hear it on the air and want to participate, and people out in Greene County will be excited about having a studio over there. So it's, as everything is in this project, it's a matter of fundraising.
Right.
So we're going to have to raise a little more funds to get the Catskill studio built, and the Caro studio would then come after that. Uh-huh. So it's a little bit of a project, but our launch event will take place at the Catskill Community Center.
Oh, okay.
And we were kind of mentioning it yesterday, but there's some people working on building a cardboard model of the studio to sort of give people a sense of what it's going to be like there in the storefront window with the glass and everything.
Kate, weren't you working on that yesterday? Or no, 2 days ago.
On Tuesday, yeah. We're working with the kids to build equipment out of cardboard so everyone can get a sense of what we actually need and what's going to go into it. Equipment with price tags.
Yeah, so people can pledge to sort of sponsor a piece of equipment or support, you know, pledge for some part of a piece of equipment, buy a mic, buy a cable, buy a console.
And hopefully we can start replacing that cardboard equipment with real equipment.
Real walls.
Yeah, real equipment probably works a little better.
A little bit.
It's harder to make.
All right, so we've got the news coming up in a few minutes. maybe we should listen to a song or two. Is that what you were thinking, Mark?
Yeah, I was hoping that you bring that song. You played a song the other day by this artist, and maybe you could find
it. All right, I'll find it. You keep talking.
Introduce it for all of our listeners out there. Again, we're sitting with Kate Blofson and Kaya Weidman, Cass and Kennedy, and I'm Mark LaCoy, and this is WGXC.org, Acre, New York, Niverville, and Chatham. East Chatham to Athens. And don't forget the Hudson River.
Well, we had talked about a theme for our show today as well. Maybe we can introduce listeners to sort of what's going to be upcoming in the what exciting news and information and personalities are going to be upcoming in the next hour.
Yeah, we were talking about having alphabetized themes of the day, which you guys may or may not be interested in, but...
In joining Kai, if Kai and I do a morning show, we'll pick a letter, much like Sesame Street, and a number. And some, you know, well, like today's theme is agriculture.
Yeah.
And like it's something that people often forget about this time of year because it's, you know, the dead of winter and, you know, nobody's really thinking about farms maybe, but...
Don't farmers go to, like, the Caribbean in the winter?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Once they've got their big wads, they just kind of hit the beaches.
All right. Well, speaking of farming, here's Lady Gaga.
Ra ra ah ah ah, ra ma ra ma ma, ga ga, ooh la la, what's your bad romance?
All right, this is Cassin Kennedy and Mark LaCoy, and you're listening to the WGXC Morning Show on 90.7 FM, hands-on radio for Acre, Catskill, Hudson, and all of Greene and Columbia counties. Okay, and the news headlines today, Gillibrand in Tucson with the first couple. With all the news about President Obama's healing speech in Tucson yesterday, which every conservative pundit appear to be praising, at least for now, it turns out that our region's own former congressman and current U.S. senator made the trip to Arizona with the first couple on Air Force One. She and other congressional members, a press release noted, traveled to a University of Arizona Medical Center to visit Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' husband, staff, and other victims and their loved ones before attending the mass service on the University of Arizona campus. Quote, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said that only in moments of darkness can we see the stars. I hope in this time of sadness and loss we can find new strength to come together as a nation and foster greater respect for one another, Gillibrand said in a press release. She continued, quote, we may never make any sense of this heinous crime, but I remember how Gabby so often urged people to stand up to the violent language that divides us and focus on solutions. That is exactly what we need to do right now. I want to thank President Obama for his compassionate leadership at this time of great national tragedy. My thoughts and prayers are with all the victims of this horrible tragedy, their loved ones, and with all Americans as we struggle to move forward together. End quote. Another news item, new savings from reduced snowplow crews. Another sign of the times from the Daily Mail reports on how Greene County Highway Department is trimming costs by cutting back snowplow personnel to one per truck, ending the tradition of sending out a trainee, quote, wingman on regular runs in exchange for solo runs. In the story, Greene County Highway Superintendent Gary Harvey said that the department is already realizing some savings during this winter season, training plow truck drivers to both drive and operate the plow. A wingman to operate the plow would typically sit in the cab with the driver, Harvey said, but due to the budget restraints, quote, we were down on personnel. People are retiring and not being replaced. We're instituting this year the pilot program for one-person plowing, end quote. Without compromising safety, drivers are now being trained to use the truck's center console to operate the plows. Of the 26 trucks sent out around the county during heavy snow, a majority of them will soon have a single operator, although for safety purposes, a few of the trickier routes will maintain double cab crews due to the windiness or narrowness of the roadway. Harvey said about four drivers have been properly trained so far, and they could expect a significant savings by season's end, though it's still too early to tell how much. The county's annual budget for snow removal exceeds $2.6 million for about 270 miles of county highways. About $1.1 million was budgeted for personnel services, which includes hourly and overtime wages. The county is also looking to technology and new municipal plow sharing programs to cut costs.
In other news, a story by Paul Smart. The Daily Mail reports January 12th that the Cairo Zoning Commission is continuing to shift its first ever zoning ordinance by now agreeing to expand the list of potential uses in its already amended commercial mixed-use district on Route 145 in the direction of neighboring Durham. And while the amended uses include new agricultural allowances for those looking to grow crops for commercial purposes with no requirement for minimum acreage, Doron Tyler Antrim reports that the commission also decided to put uses such as bed and breakfast operations, daycare centers, or nursery schools up for full site plan reviews. In addition, all proposed educational training facilities, wind towers, and hotels or motels must now apply for a special use permit too. A bar or tavern must apply a special use permit to operate in the mountaintop district only. The commission plans to review at its next meeting regulations in the new Main Street Commercial District, which runs from the intersection with Route 23 near the Bank of Greene County to Route 32. Following a public hearing by the Zoning Commission, the law will be handed to the town board. The board must then hold its own hearing. To read the rest of this story, go to WGXE.org and read it on the newsroom. In other news, a felony car chase in Eastern Columbia County. The Chatham man faces felony charges after he allegedly led state police on a chase early Tuesday, according to this morning's Time, Wednesday morning's Time Union, which reported that Robert E. Perez, 29, is charged with resisting arrest, unlawfully fleeing a police officer, felony DUI, reckless endangerment, and marijuana possession after he failed to stop at a stop sign and led police on a 10-mile chase through Columbia County around 2:30 a.m. Troopers in Livingston said Perez failed to stop at a stop sign on Route 203. Perez did not pull over for police and drove about 10 miles on various roads before finally stopping on Route 21 and Pheasant Lane in the town of Hillsdale. Perez refused to leave his car and allegedly resisted when police tried to remove him by force, troopers added. Perez's breath had a strong alcohol odor and he refused to take a breathalyzer test, troopers said, and he also allegedly had some marijuana. Perez was arraigned in Greenport Town Court and sent to Columbia County Jail without bail. He is scheduled to return to court on Wednesday.
All right. And we have Tom Rowe is going to catch us up on yesterday's weather with this clip.
Wednesday's weather was just about expected locally, with virtually all schools and closed for the day because of the snow and a messy morning commute. Snow totals were reported much higher in Columbia County than in Greene County from the National Weather Service and other sources. We've got 15.5 inches reported in Canaan, 14.5 in North Chatham, 14 in Hillsdale, 12 in Claverack, 10 in Livingston, 8 in Cairo, 5 in Rensselaerville, 4.5 in Greenville, 3 in Freehold, and 2.25 in Ravenna. The ski resorts are reporting, Hunter and Wyndham both reported 10, and Catamount in Hillsdale reported 18. Of course, the ski resorts may be putting their thumb on the scales there. You know, the National Weather Service reports 14 in Hillsdale, and Catamount in Hillsdale is reporting 18. Hunter and Wyndham may also be, have a sort of different scale there for measuring ski resort snowfall. Snow emergencies remain in effect in several municipalities around the area. In Cairo, they're in effect until 8 p.m. Friday. In Catskill, all parking on Main Street is not allowed Thursday night for snow removal. So tonight you cannot have your car anywhere on Main Street because they're going to have big trucks removing snow. Hudson's snow emergency ends 8 a.m. Friday morning, and cars today, Thursday, need to be parked on the even-numbered side of the streets. The Register stars Lindy Suchow reports that on Wednesday, the Hudson Police Department issued almost $125 tickets for cars parked on the wrong side of the street, though no vehicles have been towed yet. So again, today, Thursday, you need to be parked on even-numbered side of the street in Hudson. You don't want to be parked anywhere on Main Street in Catskill tonight, and the snow emergency rules remain in effect in Cairo until 8 p.m. Friday. This is Tom Rowe for the WGXC Newsroom Headlines.
This in the news. Don't cut emergency radio, says Schumer. If the Capital Region in Hudson Valley were ever under the threat of terrorism, it could be vulnerable. That's the message Senator Charles Schumer, Democrat for New York, delivered under snow flurries and surrounded by police
Tuesday on the steps of City Hall, according to a piece in...
Yes, in the Times Union, sorry. Which goes on to say that Schumer issued a warning after a cut of $913,000 meant to pay for radios that enable emergency agencies throughout the region. Our first responders behind us need the resources, Schumer said, adding that the region has the 10th busiest train station in the county, in the country, in Rensselaer, and is an international leader in nanotechnology with plants in Albany and the emergence of global foundries in Saratoga County. It also holds important assets as the state's capital. All of those factors make the capital region and Hudson Valley between Albany and the city more likely to be threatened. Schumer is further reported as saying the region received $1.9 million in 2009 under the Urban Areas Security Initiative program to pay for the improvements, Schumer said, but the number was cut in 2010. Even though the overall amount of money distributed by the program increased. The capital region was one of two areas in the state to have its 2010 funding cut under the program enacted after the 9/11 terror attacks. The other was Syracuse. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. Greene County warned of ATM hacking crimes, a nationwide machine scam struck Greene County last year, and investigators are seeking tips on catching the suspect. Colin DeVries reported in today's Daily Mail. His story focuses on a single incident caught on a security camera in Durham last June, but extrapolates that the incident may be part of a larger trend that will grow now, at least according to local police. For the rest of that story, please go to WGXE.org, the newsroom. We're going to play a little bit of music, and then Paul Smart is going to be on the phone.
This guy, I think. I just like to say before I start that it's one of the pleasures of my life to be able to be on this stage with these people tonight. They got it now, Robbie.
The big bird.
It's 7:15, so that means it's time for the news with Paul Smart. Good morning, Paul. How are you? Hang on a second. You know what? We just lost Paul, and that was my fault. So he'll call back in just a minute, I'm sure, and I'll try and do this right. And we cut you off of Neil Young also, so we're just ruining your morning left and right here. And we'll give Paul just a second. He may not know that he's not with us. So
I can hear him calling now.
So, okay, do you got any A words for your news today? Maybe
amateur
radio. Thanks, Cassid. The sky is pink if you live anywhere near Green in Columbia County. I'm sorry, here, what'd you say?
It's looking beautiful out there.
It really is. Something about doing early morning radio gets you up early.
And pumped for the day.
Yeah. I think, you know, anytime your cell phone rings, I can hear it through the headphones, so. I thought I heard it through the headphones. Sorry about this delay. We'll have Paul on the phone soon. I'm sure there's some other headlines. I'm gonna go back to this one. Columbia County gets behind its agriculture. The Columbia County government has formed a coalition to craft a plan to support promote local agriculture. The success of the 18-month process will depend upon broad public input, especially from the farm community, according to a press release sent out on January 11th. 5 public meetings are planned over the next 3 months, starting Saturday, January 22nd in Chatham, and a survey is being mailed to agricultural producers in order to assess the state of local agriculture and design countywide farmland protection plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for everyone, is that the end of that one or is there more?
No, but if anybody wants to read more about this, they can go to any of these websites, the Land Conservancy or WGXE.org's newsroom, the report on that.
Well, a little about what's going on with Paul Smart's report right now is we don't have the studio lines hooked up, so we're trying to do this all through the cell phone. But that means Paul has to turn off his computer, so he really can't hear anything that's being broadcast. But we got cut off, so I think Paul right now is reading the news, but he doesn't know that we're not on the air. And since we're doing it over the phone, I'm calling him back, but his phone is busy.
So
you see what I'm saying? So I can't reach him, but I promise you, Paul did his job, and he is reading you the news right now. But you can't hear it.
Well, nonetheless, he wrote this report. So I just continue to read this report till we had that sorted out. And maybe when we do get Paul on the phone, we'll just have a laugh about it.
Okay, I hope so.
So the press release from the Columbia Land Conservancy goes on to note that Columbia County is taking advantage of the Farmland Protection Program created by the New York State Legislature. Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation is working with the Columbia Land Conservancy to facilitate the program with the county's Ag and Farmland Protection Board. The program establishes a methodology for local governments to assess the status and potential of farming in every community. Economic value, open space value, and consequences of conversion will be analyzed. A survey has been developed to be distributed to the county's producers to complement dialogue produced through the 5 public meetings. A farmland protection plan is expected to be finalized by mid-2012. The process is led by County Farmland Protection Board and a working committee headed by Todd Erling, Executive Director of the Hudson Valley Agribusiness Development Corporation. Other organizations represented on the committee are the Columbia County Department of Planning, Columbia County Soil and Water Conservation District, Columbia Land Conservancy, Cornell Cooperative Extension, and Farm Credit East, formerly known as First Pioneer Farm Credit. I'm hearing that phone again.
We were thinking, while we're on the topic of food and agriculture, and since we don't have Paul on the line, I'm just noticing Kate looking up some stuff about the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is kind of some big news. Kate, did you want to read a headline from that? Oh, her computer's frozen. We've got good technical difficulties here today.
Maybe that's what I'm hearing through the headphones. Frozen computer.
Yeah. So is this about food safety?
Well, that's what it's supposed to be about. I'd like to actually perhaps have our caller touch on it a little bit, but it's, again, one of these things where it's a bill that's supposed to be about food safety, but in the end, the people it's really going to impact are the small farmers, small producers.
Right.
And those are, you know, things like farmers markets and small-scale food production, which is actually not what has caused these dangers in the food system, where there's, you know, mass E. coli spreads and stuff like that. That's on a whole nother level. And a lot of the pieces of it have, you know, are supposed to make things safer, but are actually just more bureaucracy for the actual growers who are working on a small scale to make our food.
This is an act that just passed early this year. Yeah, we were just researching it, so we don't know too much about it. But it does introduce this whole host of new regulations, from, you know, how often they inspect low-risk and high-risk facilities to, you know, how producers are supposed to inform the public of dangers or introduce recalls and so on and so forth. So I think it will be a topic that we'll be talking about, because like Kaya said, it's really going to, some of these new regulations and bureaucracy are going to really impact small producers, and also say, like, I know that it's going to have a big impact on, say, purchasing raw milk, which I think is going to be illegal with the law. So we'll see what happens with that. We don't think it's very good news.
No, there was, I think it sounds like it's going to be another law where the big agri industry is going to either be able to skirt around it or buy their way past it, but it's going to probably be pretty detrimental to the small farmers.
Yeah. Well, hopefully both of our farmers, who one or two of them will call in about 10 minutes or so, and we can ask them some questions if they're able to hear us over our cell phone system.
Well, I just wanted to say that if that is actually what's happening, that Paul is giving us his report now over the phone that's not on, and then figures it out within the next few minutes, we should do Paul's report, uh-huh. And then we probably will have time to fit in the calls you have lined up.
Okay.
I think Paul's call takes precedence over any interviews we have. But I really want to hear from your – I want to hear your farm report.
Yeah, well, something that we have been for a long time talking about having as a part of the morning news program, and for listeners who don't know, I've been working on this radio station project for 3 years and – or almost 3 years – and there's been so many processes of, like, figuring out visions and ideas and getting input from the community. And a couple years back, I had been talking to a farmer in Germantown, a really amazing guy, kind of a farmer activist, who's been very supportive to us in the farming community in Germantown. And I asked him, you know, what would you want out of a community radio station? And he said, well, you know, there should be farm reports first thing in the morning for farmers, crop reports, commodity prices. These are things farmers will wake up and tune into to get that information. You know, these days it's pretty much you have to go on the internet. That's not you know, most of the time, if a farmer's up in the morning, they're working, they're doing something, you know, they're moving around. So radio is a really good way to get this information out. And so the other day we looked up, you know, commodity prices. And I was like, well, what does this mean? You know, it was just a series of numbers, you know, up a few percentage points or down a few percentage points on different commodities. And I was like, I wonder what the significance is to a farmer. So hopefully Chuck Abrams, this is his name, Chuck Abram, is from Germantown, will call in and explain that to us, whether that works today or not. In general, we're hoping that that will be something that we can start to mention regularly, that there's, you know, this time of year, there's not really a crop report because there's nothing much growing, but at least just touch on something for those early risers out there, many of whom are local farmers.
I had a question. You said a farm activist. What would be the definition of that?
Well, in Chuck's case, he's just constantly working and acting in the community to try to create a stronger local food system. He's very much concerned about things like, I'm assuming, in this, you know, the Food Safety Modernization Act and various policies that affect farmers. He's been working on cooperative structures for farmers to benefit by working together with neighboring farms, farmland protection, food security, and also just being generally active in the local food system. So that's what I would call a farmer activist, if that answers your question.
I think it does. I was mostly thinking about, for our listeners out there,
yeah,
who probably they already know what a farm activist is, but I didn't.
No, it's always good to define it. And I think, you know, I'd let Chuck define his own self, although it might take about an hour.
Well, I can't wait to meet him. This just in, our technical difficulties with Paul's call-in news segment have been cleared up, and you are going to hear from him really soon. Why don't we go back into that Neil Young song from, in this one, he's playing with the band.
Paul Smart. Now we've got him back on the line, and he's going to give you the news. All right, Paul, how are you?
Oh, everything's restored to normal. What a great and beautiful day it's looking to be. But I guess the technological gremlins just got into our phone lines and took me out for a few minutes there. Anyway, as I was talking, I was looking out, and school buses were coming and going, and so it seems that all our regular systems are back up and running today. There are a few districts up in the mountains and the Catskills, and I suspect, you know, from what I'm hearing over in Connecticut and other places, that there's a two-hour delay. But most of the places in our listening area are running normally today. But what I was talking about before was in terms of education is now looking pretty certain it's going to be the big topic, a political issue, of both this year and probably next year as well. And all this other talk about defense and the economy and all of this, you know, what it's done is that it's forced people to start cutting things in ways. They're trying to cut spending and hoping that programs will then lose weight as a result. But all of this is resulting in some very dire situations for our public schools. And this is coming into view locally very dramatically. In the Register Star today, there are two separate stories that indicate this pretty clearly. One comes out of a meeting in Kinderhook at the Ichabod Crane School District on Tuesday night, where about 400 people showed up for the, I think it was the third of seven forums that they're doing on how to face looming budget cuts for the coming year. And, you know, the things they're considering up at, in Kinderhook are the closing of two elementary schools, I think out of four, and consolidating with another school district up in Rensselaer County, possibly two school districts, and creating a super school district. And but the thing that got everybody really riled up on Tuesday night was the fact, was a proposal to cut kindergarten classes from full day to half day and then completely eliminate the district's pre-K program. And this causes problems in a couple of areas. One, everybody pretty much agrees, especially in the academic community and pretty much everywhere except in certain political communities, that early education is really key to both one's lifelong learning abilities, but also our culture's ability to kind of keep ahead of the curve in terms of all the changes that are coming along. The other key importance is that kindergarten and pre-K programs also take the weight off of individual families for daycare. I know this having a kid in pre-K myself. It just makes a huge importance when he's off at school half a day, or next year the fact that it'll be most of a day, and it allows us to get a certain amount of work done without having to eat into our salaries each day to pay for daycare. And we know that he's learning, and it just helps the whole thing. And so it's just causing a big problem as schools start to look at such drastic cuts. Also in the Register Star today is a story about in the city of Hudson, where City School District Superintendent John Howe is saying that he's now looking at a budget gap for the coming year of about $3.5 million. And he's not making any proposals yet, but saying, you know, there's only so far you can go cutting the budget, as they've done now for 2 years straight, with a third year coming on a state level. Federal budget aid has dropped significantly, and now they're looking at a 2% property tax cap, which would, as Catskill Superintendent Kate Farrell has said, would probably result in a 10% hike in taxes and more cuts with local school districts. And around this area, we've seen that result in the dropping of sports programs and the dropping of pretty much all gifted and talented and arts programming, after-school stuff. You know, and it puts a lot of pressure on PTAs and to start privately raising funds to augment their kids. kids'
right
education. Are you guys still there?
We're here.
Okay, just checking in. The other thing that I've been noticing today is just a little story. It was a little story down kind of out in the Catskills, primarily, and lower in the Hudson Valley, where a number of towns in the New York City watershed area have convinced Ulster County to sue New York City, and then all the oversight, it looks like it will be also all the oversight agencies, including the state, DEC, and Department of Health, and probably the Federal Environmental Protection Agency over muddy water. It turns out that the city, which controls seven reservoirs in the Catskills, one of the major reservoirs, the Ashokan, is fed by the Esopus Creek, and it in turn flows in this kind of giant sea out through much of the northern part of the county and then empties into the Hudson over near Saugerties. And in the past, there's been a lot of flooding in the Esopus Valley, and the city opened up an old water release channel farther up in the Catskills to alleviate kind of massive flooding and allow for the water to go out in an easier, more regular format. The Ashokan is in turn fed by the Schoharie Reservoir, which is partly in Greene County and Schoharie County farther up. What the city has wanted to do for years is to eliminate the muddiness or turbidity in its own water, but what's happened is that they've been quietly letting water go at various times, causing flooding and all sorts of damage downstream in Ulster County towns, including a lot of harm to the cornfields and other agricultural practices that are going on in the flats along the lower Esopus Valley, which is one of the more fertile areas in the Hudson Valley. And so this is going to be a big story as it progresses over the coming year or years, both in terms of its local ramifications, but also because it indicates a growing number of worries around how we deal with water, both too much water as our climate changes and what used to be 100-year floods have become three times a year floods, but also as we start to deal with finding fairness of distribution of water between in our country, between those areas that have a lot and those that have none, look for a lot of legal battles in those areas, and look for a lot of that for land in the Hudson Valley in particular, because we have a lot of water and at times too much water. Anyway, that's how things are looking today, and glad that everything's back on cue with our phone system over there, and it looks like it's going to be a gorgeous day today.
All right. Well, Paul, thanks. Sorry about how funky things got this morning.
The funky is good.
Yeah.
That's my view. So there's a great Japanese term for what they call wabi-sabi, which is the perfection of imperfection, which I think is maybe what both communities and community radio are all about in the long run.
All right, Paul. Well, thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
We want to thank Paul Smart for that news interjection. This is WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, New York, Catskill, Hudson, and online at WGXE.org. This is a WGXE youth song from some youth programmers that was for the barn raising in September. It played on a loop during the parade. I don't know if anybody saw that parade or was able to be part of it. It went from St. Mary's up Allen Street, down 4th, up Warren Street, and then down the wrong way on 5th Street over to Columbia, and then back down to the Cannonball Factory where we had a big party, and that was the end. We went online then that day. So here's the youth song for the WGXC youth programmers.
Felt like something was gonna happen here, and now we get to witness Hudson growing every year. Thanks to WGXC, we get a song together. I remember when getting friends was tough as leather. I remember when the first head started turning. Now with this radio, my lyrics are burning. This town supported me as I was growing up, and now it seemed to be cruising on the road above.
The buildings, the history, the people, the mystery, WGXC.
All right, that was Wall of Voodoo with Mexican Radio. And we're going to have a segment coming up with Kate and Kaya in just a minute. I'm Catherine Kennedy, and you're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
And I'm Mark LaCoy. It's about 7:45, and the next few minutes we're going to have a call in with Kaya's farm activist.
Hello.
Hi, Chuck.
Hi.
So,
yep.
Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you now, yes.
Oh, good. So do you want to just quickly introduce yourself? I gave you a little intro, but maybe you want to just tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, my name is Chuck Abraham from Old Sawmill Farm in Germantown, New York. I raise beef and pork and chicken and some apples and some peaches. And in addition to that, I represent a group of farmers around our area which tries to market the products together in order to get the best price we can. And basically, that's what I do.
That's hello. Hey, yeah. We hear you great. So Chuck, we were hoping that perhaps you could explain to us. I was telling our listeners that a while back I had talked to you about what you thought would be important to have on a community radio station, especially as a farmer.
And I know I understand completely. Well, the most important information for a producer. A small farm producer or a large producer, is what is the current price being offered in the wholesale markets that are serviced by our region? Excuse me a moment. For example, the Hunts Point market in New York is famous, and it's the largest terminal market. That is a place where goods are shipped from all over the world to that terminal market for sale in the New York regional area. It's enormously big, and within about 50 miles of Hunts Point Market, you have over 22 million people that are serviced. And in addition to that, wide ethnic diversity. So you have a lot of different kinds of crops that are represented in that market. And when we say a terminal market, we mean a market where there are firms who will buy wholesale from the farmers in large quantities and have a USDA inspector there. So if you're sending down something which you call U.S. number one or U.S. extra fancy or whatever, if there's a dispute at all about whether they are or are not that quality, and that's up to an inspector to take a look and say, yeah, they are, they aren't, this is the quality they are, and so on. Mm-hmm. Now, those prices are, the prices that you get there are called first receiver prices, normally, meaning that they're the price somebody would pay for a trailer truckload of apples or bananas or anything that they're specializing in. But the critical part for the smaller farmer is to know just about what that wholesale price is, so he can for himself say, well, how can I do better than that? Because that is only useful to the very biggest of the farmers, the people who are delivering tractor trailer loads of sweet corn and or tomatoes or any product, because they're competing with people who are shipping from all over the country. And the markets that count for us here in the Hudson Valley are the markets in Menands, New York, that's a USDA market in Menands, and the market in Boston, and the market in at Hunts Point. They give you at least an idea what a sack of potatoes or a sack of onions or a bushel of apples is being quoted on the market. For the smaller farmer, it gives him an idea of what they can hope for if they sell it more locally, which would be typically somewhat above the prices that the USDA is showing in any given day. That's the most important function of that of those market prices around here. In this time of the year, of course, you know, onions and potatoes sort of dominate in our region right now as fresh crop that farmers might have. But apples too. There's a lot of apple packers around who are still packing apples.
Uh-huh.
So this is the way that you try to gauge what you have is worth and how much of a premium you can get. If you're selling in farmers markets in the region, if that's your principal business, then you're going to be quite a little bit more interested in what the retail price at store level is. When I was in the season of doing farmers market very heavily, I always figured I could get a premium over what a supermarket was charging if my produce was fresher and more personal.
Right.
If you're growing, of course, organic and you're going into a market, then you're going to get another premium for that. And if you're really local to the area that you're servicing, if you're really going to a market, a farmer's market that's within, you know, 10, 12, 15 miles of your farm, you can get another premium for local. There are plenty of people out there who want to support local food. So for you, the question is, if a pound of beans is selling for $1 in the supermarket, can you get $1.25? That kind of thing. You know, knowing what the general market price is serves as a kind of an underpinning for your pricing. Does that help at all?
Yeah, that's super helpful. So, okay. So basically, like, if we were to read, say, the corn, soy, wheat, and meat prices one morning, as a listener, that would help you make a decision about whether it's a wise time to sell your product that day or try to.
Well, if you're going to talk about, you know, things like sweet corn, that's one thing. If you're going to talk about feed corn, that's quite another thing. So if your aim is to reach the smaller farmer who is in most in need of information. We have, for example, in this region, farmers who farm 6 or 7,000 acres of sweet corn and have a huge operation